Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. Cryptids have haunted and intrigued people for hundreds of years. Whether it's 10-foot-tall Bigfoots or long-necked monsters lurking in the water, reportings of these creatures continue while others question their existence. And Ohio is considered a hotspot for one in particular, Bigfoot. Joining us to help uncover the mystique is Angus Gillespie, professor of American Studies at Rutgers University. Welcome to All Sides.
Thank you.
So first off, can you start off by telling us what a cryptid is exactly?
Oh, I'm happy to be here. Yeah, a cryptid is basically a hidden animal. And I'm not a scientist, I'm a folklorist. Mm-hmm. So these are traditional stories that are sort of passed on father to son, mother to daughter, generation after generation. And when we hear this story, the way our minds are wired, we either tend to have belief or disbelief. And what I struggle to do as a folklorist is to keep an open mind. These creatures are not proven to exist. But on the other hand, they're not proven not to exist. So I struggle to keep an open mind, and I urge my students to keep an open mind. What I tell my students at Rutgers is it's a bad idea when you hear a story about Bigfoot just to casually dismiss it. Oh, no, that can't be true. At the same time, it's probably not a good idea to say, oh, yeah, I totally believe in it. The trick is to keep an open mind. This is an ongoing investigation. And my rationale for this is that in the past, there have been cryptids who were found to be real. Hmm. And once they become real, then they're no longer cryptids. I have a half a dozen examples of this. Some of them are kind of obscure, like the platypus in New South Wales. That was believed to be a cryptid. And then, boom, there was evidence it existed. And so it moved from folklore to zoology. And there are even others that we wouldn't even remotely considered to be cryptids. They've been accepted for so long. But for example, the gorilla from Africa. At one time, that was believed to be a cryptid. The giant squid of the deep ocean. At one time, that was believed to be a cryptid. Even, believe this or not, the kangaroo.
We all take really?
We take the kangaroo for granted. But at one time, it was thought to be a cryptid. So I argue, let's keep an open mind. Let's let an investigation proceed.
Some of those surprised me. The platypus and the kangaroo definitely surprised me. But I could see the giant squid situation because, you know, a long time ago, people didn't have proper diving equipment. So they would just that would be harder to prove or disprove, I would think.
Yeah.
So do most of these ideas of these cryptids, do they originate from a story? And that's what you're saying. It's a story being passed, grandparent to parent, and it just gets passed down generations. Do they all originate as stories?
I believe so. And I think it's important to make a distinction. As a folklorist, I point out the distinction between, say, a fairy tale like Cinderella. We tell this the fairy tales to our kids to amuse them. And we all know that it's a made up story. But when we move from fairy tales to legends, legends have an element of belief. And so it's a different category altogether.
So when people think of cryptids, I think they think of Bigfoot, the Loch Ness Monster, maybe the Jersey Devil. Can you tell us the backstory? Can you tell us the folklore of the Loch Ness Monster?
That takes place in a big lake in Scotland. Mm-hmm. And there have been stories for generation after generation. And even, I believe it was back in the 1950s, there was even a photograph that was very convincing. But upon closer examination, it turned out to be perhaps a floating log that resembled the Loch Ness Monster. One of the problems with the Loch Ness Monster is that lake is so very deep. They've had like scientific investigations, and it's been very difficult to find any proof that the creature exists. But again, I say, let's keep an open mind. Maybe someday something will show up in Scotland.
Yeah. As someone who studies this, is there like a database or something where people track sightings? Like, where is the Loch Ness Monster? Do people report the sightings? Is anyone tracking it?
That's a good question. The problem is that the problem is that looking for cryptids doesn't get much official scientific investigation. It's very hard for a scientist to go to the government and say, I want to investigate Bigfoot, because the government doesn't take this thing seriously. So most of the investigations have been done by amateurs. And one of the things I do at Rutgers is I tell my students, if you're really, really interested in this, become an investigator, because the investigation is usually done by amateurs. And you might need a telephone to record the interviews with people who sighted it. You need detailed maps to show where you found it. You need photographic equipment, even sealable plastic bags for hair or feces, a compass, binoculars. Most of the investigations are done by amateurs because there's no money available for the professional scientists to do it.
Now, of these cryptids, is there one that stands out to you in terms of evidence? Does one have more evidence and more sighting than any others, but has still not been proven? Kind of like where the kangaroo and the platypus probably were until they were proven. So is there one that stands out as has the most people tracking it?
That's a very good question. And I think the answer would be Bigfoot.
Yeah.
Bigfoot, it's pretty... I mean, there's no proof, but there's a lot of suggestible evidence. For example, the number of sightings in now different sites have different numbers, but one of the most reliable ones, there have been something like 559 sightings in the state of Washington, something like 400 sightings in the state of California, 288 in the state of Florida, but fully 274 in Ohio.
Yep. So that's why you're here today, because Bigfoot lives here. Ohio wants to claim him. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ohio ranks maybe fourth in the nation, believe it or not. So yeah, we have a good reason for you and me, Amy, to be talking about this.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about wild, unexplainable creatures around the world and here in Ohio with Angus Gillespie, professor of American Studies at Rutgers University. So Ohio has Bigfoot, of course, but Bigfoot goes by other names. Do you categorize it all together whenever Bigfoot is called other names? What are some other names people use for Bigfoot?
Good question. One of the most universally accepted names is Sasquatch. Mm-hmm. And that was invented by J.W. Burns back in the 1930s. That's often used. But then what happened was there was a bulldozer crew in the mountains of California back in 1958. And there was a bulldozer operator named Jerry Crew. And as he was sitting on his bulldozer and he looked over the side, he saw these giant footprints. And he's the one, Jerry Crew, that came up with the name Bigfoot, 1958 in California.
So Sasquatch is another name. Now, with the abominable snowman, is that a different one? Because that's more in the winter weather areas.
The abominable snowman is also known as the Yeti, yeah. And this is in the Himalaya Mountains in Asia. And by all accounts, these are different creatures. The Yeti is not quite the same as Bigfoot.
Do you know when speculation of Bigfoot first started? Do you have an idea of when people first started talking about it? Maybe not when it got its official name of Bigfoot, but maybe just when the legend began?
That's another very good question. I believe you can point to a book written by Theodore Roosevelt back in 1893. It was called The Wilderness Hunter. And Theodore Roosevelt, let's be honest here, he never claimed that he saw Bigfoot, but he had a friend, a guy that he met, that passionately believed that he really saw it. And Theodore Roosevelt wrote that up in his book. So that gave it a lot of leverage. And that book came out in 1893. So I think we could point to that as a real turning point in name recognition.
And when we talk about Bigfoot, is it generally considered to be an ape or a human, or is that still a question too?
That's a very good question. Once again, you're good with the questions.
I'll
Thank
do it for a living. I'll write that down.
you. I'll write you an endorsement. Yeah. Well, the thing is, Bigfoot is at least 1 foot taller than any known apes and much taller than a human. But by many accounts, even though it's taller than an ape, it's often reported to have a human-like face. So there is an interesting, what should we say, ambiguity.
Now, have you heard of a few other Ohio folklore? Have you ever heard of the Loveland Frog or the Loveland Frogman?
Oh, I'm embarrassed to say I haven't heard. I'm here in New Jersey. I mostly work on the Jersey Devil.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, anyway, just for your future reference, if you'd like to look him up, it's a legendary humanoid frog described as standing roughly 4 feet tall, allegedly spotted in Loveland, Ohio. So you can look that up for yourself later and add it to your folklore stories.
Okay.
Tell me about the Jersey Devil. So what is the folklore there?
Oh, can I tell you the story?
Yeah.
One day in the late fall, listen carefully when the wind comes off the pines. It almost seems like the wind is trying to tell us something. Oh, mother Leeds. Oh, mother Leeds. It seems that Jane Leeds and her husband Daniel, they lived along a swamp along the Mullica River. Now, folks in these parts said it was a strange family. It was an unusual family. Well, yeah, it was unusual. There were 12 children, and so that was unusual for the day. And the thing was, Daniel Leeds, he was a good fisherman. He was a good hunter. He was an excellent gardener. There was always food on the table. That wasn't the problem. The problem was he took very little interest in raising the children. And so Jane Leeds, she had a tough life. She did all the cooking and the cleaning and taking care of the kids, and she had 12 kids. She was at her wit's end. And one night, when she was saying her bedtime prayers, she said, "Lord," when she learned she was pregnant, she said, "Lord, let this one not be a child. Let this one be a devil." Well, we now know that that was a mistake. When Mother Leeds' 12th child was born, it started out a perfectly normal little healthy baby boy with blonde hair and blue eyes, but then something went terribly wrong. And in a space of less than 20 minutes, it grew to the size of 2 full-grown men. And it had the head of a horse, the chest of a man, the wings of a bat, and the feet of a kangaroo. It was horrible, and it was powerful. It was all covered with fur. Massive arms, massive paws, and at the end of each paw was a razor-sharp fingernail. And then, with one swipe of his right arm, he slit the midwife in attendance, who collapsed in a pool of blood. The creature gave out a blood-curdling scream, escaped out the chimney, where he's terrified the people of the Pine Barrens for the last 250 years. So what I would tell you is, the next time you go into the woods in South Jersey at night, be careful, listen carefully. If you hear the sudden tracks of a foot behind you, beware, beware of the Jersey Devil.
Wow. Thank you so much for telling that story. That was amazing. I was about my last question to you was going to be, what's your favorite cryptid story? But I think I just found out. Is that your favorite?
Yes.
That's amazing. I okay. So the Do you know how many sightings the Jersey Devil has had? Is that something you keep track of too? You had numbers for Bigfoot, so.
Yeah, it varies. There's quite a few in the southern counties of New Jersey in what's known as the Pine Barrens, and quite a few in the northwestern part of New Jersey, which is part of the Appalachian Trail. I don't have the numbers off the top of my head, but we got to be careful because sometimes there are hoaxes out there, and so we got to sort out the hoaxes from the facts.
And this terrifying 13th child of this woman, does he she it does it stay in New Jersey? Have there been sightings elsewhere?
I think there's been a few in eastern Pennsylvania, but most of them are in New Jersey. It's interesting because historically, this was a creature of the Pine Barrens. It was named the Leeds Devil. But over time, it became the Jersey Devil. And in fact, I think it was in 1937 that the New Jersey State Legislature made it the official demon of the state of New Jersey. And to this date, New Jersey is the only state with an official state demon.
What a great claim to fame. I love that. And the hockey team, so there's that. All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. Angus Gillespie, Professor of American Studies at Rutgers University. Thank you so much for joining us, Professor.
My pleasure.
And coming up, we're going to talk with the skeptical scientist and one of a conference speakers at the upcoming Bigfoot Conference here in Ohio. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. For some, the desire to find Bigfoot is not necessarily about the creature himself, but the hunt and the curiosity he brings. From TV shows to movies to podcasts to investigation hikes, the myth of Bigfoot is oftentimes about engaging and finding your own evidence. This desire to find your own information in the unknown is many people's motivation when it comes to Bigfoot hunting. Joining us now is Renee Holland, the skeptical scientist and former co-host of Finding Bigfoot. Welcome, Renee.
Oh, hi, Amy. Thank you so much for having me.
So what is your personal connection to Bigfoot? How did you get connected to all of this hunt for Bigfoot?
Oh, my goodness. Well, I do want to clarify one thing. We don't carry weapons. We're researching. We're investigating. We're not hunting.
Yeah, I guess I'm using hunting. Yes, the search. Yes.
No, I was raised in South Dakota. I really have my dad and a lot of my indigenous friends to thank for really my fascination with, Bigfoot. But I think my dad really promoted the curiosity that led me on a path, to being a scientist. And from there, it really never got out of my system. So it's kind of been a lifelong mystery for me that I think so many people also embrace.
Now, the guest we had on in the last segment studies folklore, and he had some statistics about the number of Bigfoot sightings in each state. And Ohio ranks fourth in the country for the most Bigfoot sightings. Would you agree with that? I mean, I'm sure numbers can come from a lot of different places, but Ohio ranks up there, right, with the Bigfoot sightings?
Absolutely. My good friends are so many of them. The Bigfoot Field Researchers Organization, the BFRO, really, I think, is worldwide is one of the best databases, and they're running with like 75,000 some reports there, and sightings and reports really are just the beginning. But my stats off the top of my head, it's number four, number five. Ohio has a rich history of Bigfoot reports and activity, and I think there's a good you know, 25, some of them per year. They're so solid. They're just begging to be followed up. But there are so many good researchers out there in the field. That's definitely happening.
So you are the former co-host of Finding Bigfoot, a show on Animal Planet, where you would investigate Bigfoot sightings. How was it working on Finding Bigfoot? Tell me about that stage of your life.
Wow. I mean, you know, what an amazing once in a lifetime experience that really was, you know, more than a decade of my life. I am a research scientist by training. I'm a river scientist. So grew up in South Dakota, moved out to the Pacific Northwest, Washington State, which is one of the states that has the most reports historically. But again, you know, just a good point here is a Bigfoot report means that, you know, allegedly a Sasquatch is there and a Bigfoot is claiming to have seen them. So, but that's where I moved out to Washington State, became a scientist. But it's while I was doing my field work, I wanted to, you know, have those stories in the areas that I was. So that's actually how I developed a relationship with Matt Moneymaker, the president of the BFRO, and really strengthened my relationships with the indigenous tribes of the Pacific Northwest as we collaborated on fieldwork projects. And it was after a full, 12 years working for the Northwest Fisheries Science Center, specifically at NOAA, doing different restoration projects. I was heading off to graduate school. I was on a break. And it was during that time that Matt Moneymaker reached out to me and they were filming, well, unbeknownst to me at the time, they were filming a pilot for a television show that became Finding Bigfoot. So quite honestly, how did I wind up on Finding Bigfoot? Honoring my father's memory, a love of Bigfoot stories, curiosity of what this phenomenon is. And I thought it was basically filming a pilot for a TV show to go to Alaska, one of my favorite places on the planet. And that became a full decade of my life. And, you know, one door closed and another door opened.
Yeah. So do you have a favorite episode or a favorite alleged sighting from that time of your life? Is that hard to pick? Yeah.
It's just, you know, literally a decade of my life. So, you know, the favorite person that I met, I've made so many friends and fostered ongoing, wonderful, deep relationships, favorite food, favorite, you know, vista. It's hard to say. I mean, Nepal was a dream to go to. I actually, any opportunity that we would have to travel, I would go early and stay late. So I went early, went to Nepal, had a friend meet me there. I traveled through Bhutan and up through Tibet, which was probably one of my all-time favorite experiences of my life. Difficult, intense traveling, but so memorable. Boy, within the States, you know, just so many come through me, and it's just, it goes on forever. But I've met so many wonderful people. But one thing that really stands out for me with Finding Bigfoot is so many folks who have observed or witnessed the show think that I am the cynic or the renaissance. Jokingly, I recall the comment of, "She wouldn't know Bigfoot if it bit her in the hind end." And I think what people and folks who have watched this show don't realize that my three co-hosts, my Bigfoot brothers, they had been doing this for years before there was a television show. This is a true devotion, a fascination. This was their lives. This is what they were doing. And I came along. I'm not sure if they wanted a skeptic, but that's what I am. I'm not a cynic. So before the show happened, I'd had experiences of my own I couldn't explain. And I had experiences within the show, and I continue to have experiences after. Now, I may not believe that Bigfoot's a biological undiscovered species. What I've been asking for going on 20 years is, what is Bigfoot? I did a TED Talk years back, a little playfully tongue-in-cheek, reaching out to say, I created a little slideshow, and I say, you know, the pie chart, you know, what is making up these reports? And then I honestly can stand firm and say, I think the majority of reports, this is all reports, mind you, More than 50% are misidentification, and several are pareidolia. And then you can have some that are classified as medical, whether they are hallucinating or imbibing on something. There are people that are hoaxed, and there are people who might just be, you know, mendacious or, you know, making up a story. But at the end of the day, when you look at these thousands and thousands of reports, and as a scientist, you know, try to classify them, silo them, there still is a small percentage of them every year that you can't just dismiss and write off to something else. And it's those that continue to fascinate me, let alone multi-witnesses or reports by people who I know personally in natural resource management. You know, in my 15 years of working for you know, the federal government or within academia, I've had countless colleagues come up to me and share reports that, you know, they don't want to share with that because it could really undermine their professional credibility.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about wild, unexplainable creatures this hour, in particular Bigfoot, with Renee Holland, skeptical scientist and former co-host of Finding Bigfoot. So your title, skeptical scientist, you just talked about that. Do you still go by that title? Where is it still something? Is that what you're leaning into with your career now?
Well, I mean, absolutely. You know, I love Bigfoot, and that was part of my childhood. And then as I became a scientist, what folks don't realize, skepticism gets this bad rap, and it's something that we all need to truly embrace. I look at science as not that class that you take or a book up on a shelf. It's a verb. It's a way I view the natural world. So as a curious child who was fortunate to have people in my life that enriched that and supported my curiosity, I held on to that. Because science is it's more than a body of knowledge, it's a way of thinking. It's one of my favorite quotes by one of my heroes, Carl Sagan. One of my other favorite quotes, which I include in my presentations, whether I'm talking to schools and classrooms around the country, whether it's a corporate event, but I like to say to folks, and specifically to the Bigfoot community, people come from around the world and go to these Bigfoot conferences, and they're fascinated by it, but nobody can explain what Bigfoot is. Everybody will have their opinion, and there's a lot of strong opinions, and sometimes there's some vitriol there, which I try to say, hey, you think it's an alien, you may think it's a shapeshifter, you think it's a relic hominid, quantum physics, portals, aliens, but nobody knows what it is. And what I really believe in is that, it's back to my favorite Sagan quote, is all kids are born these little natural scientists, and then we beat it out of them. But a few trickle through the system with their wonder and enthusiasm intact. And I really believe that. And I think folks that are in the Bigfoot community kind of maybe hang on to that. I know that I hung on to it, and it's why I became a scientist. But I want people to understand there's cynicism on one side. You don't believe anything. There's zealotry. You're drinking the Kool-Aid. You're not vetting your sources. You're not critically thinking. I believe on both ends. And skepticism, scientific skepticism, is something to be embraced. And I use examples that we have just within, taking it out of the Bigfoot world, within the natural world, restoration projects I work on, we have to push against the accepted belief. And to dig deeper, so often with misinformation, with malinformation and disinformation, the narrative is being controlled to, you know, profiteer or what have you. But a skeptical scientist speaks to that. And that is a badge and a label that I fully embrace and support.
Now, in just a few days, very soon, you'll be visiting Ohio for the Bigfoot Conference at Salt Fork State Park. This area of Ohio is home to many Bigfoot sightings. Where does an upcoming, you know, where does talking at a Bigfoot conference fit into your overall desire to educate people?
You know, my research is deeply personal. I mean, it's rooted in long-term immersive investigations, and that's involving going to private lands or staying connected to my indigenous friends and going on tribal lands where encounters have occurred. And these aren't one-off stories. It's patterns, long-distance ones. So that's where I spend a lot of my time. And then as a public speaker, I might go to schools because, again, I'm really wanting, to push back to what's going on with the kids. Because, see, misinformation is false, but not created or shared, trying to hurt somebody. It's really quite innocent. But malinformation's based on facts, but that's twisting it, used out of context, really often to mislead, harm, or manipulate folks. But it's the disinformation that I'm seeing so much in, unfortunately, in our politics, but also with AI, with the profiteering and Bigfoot community. Disinformation is deliberately created to, I think, mislead, harm, manipulate the data and the evidence. And not so much control, but to profiteer. So it's so important to me right now to go to the schools, put that message out there on what is Bigfoot, what could Bigfoot be, how to communicate, but most importantly, how to think critically, scientifically, to promote citizen science, because it is so important now more than ever. After I think you're speaking to an NPR station. Science has been on a full assault for a couple decades now, but we need citizen science really to understand that science works for us. The scientific method is so important, whether it's natural resources, vetting the truth. I've been hollering and on the path of banging the tambourine, and I can't stop myself. Science is part of who I am. I believe in the scientific method. It's how I view the world. And I've seen the way that folks are trying to turn everyone against scientists. The CCC, the AmeriCorps has just been defunded. Folks want to get outside and recreate. Who knows what Bigfoot is, but if Bigfoot's the vehicle to get kids excited about the outdoor world and to get folks to go outdoors, I'm on board. But let's have the correct information on what Bigfoot could be, and let's also bring people back together. Let's create, a little more junior future naturalists in the world. And if they want to then go on to a path of being a citizen scientist, let alone a scientist, my heart soars.
Well, whenever you talk about Bigfoot, do you normally use the phrase Bigfoot? Do you ever interchange Sasquatch? What's your opinion on that, the name thing?
For me, I grew up with Bigfoot, but as I have since finding Bigfoot wrapped up, and I kind of went and reconnected with friends and family, I can't get away from Bigfoot, even if I wanted to try to. It's kind of this funny double-edged sword, no matter where I go. So I learned to lean into that. How do I make a positive difference? And if there are zoos or museums or corporations who want to, hey, everybody loves Bigfoot, and a lot of people want to profiteer on that. But one thing that's very important to me is that you can't talk about Bigfoot without the indigenous story and share that part of it, because Bigfoot is part of their oral tradition. So to me, it's Bigfoot, but whether it's Sasquatch or Bookwuss or the countless names that it goes by, it's whatever is comfortable to that person, and more importantly, to the indigenous people and their ancestral lands. So it's always important to know where you are, and the indigenous respect, the understanding of the natural environment. You can learn, just immerse yourself in that area, wherever that may be.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. You've been listening to Renee Holland, skeptical scientist and the former co-host of Finding Bigfoot. Thank you, Renee, for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Amy. Have a great day.
Coming up, we're going to talk with the conference director of the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. That is when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
What you just heard right there has brought hundreds and thousands of Bigfoot fans to Ohio throughout the years. That was the Ohio Howl. Salt Fork State Park will be hosting the next Ohio Bigfoot Conference. It's an event that celebrates and discusses Bigfoot culture and looks at how Ohio fits into the big picture of the Bigfoot world. Joining us now is Mark DeWerth, owner and organizer of the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. Welcome to All Sides, Mark.
How you doing?
Thanks for joining us. So the Ohio Bigfoot Conference is at Salt Fork State Park. That's near Cambridge, which is about 90 minutes east of Columbus. Why this particular location for your conference?
Well, because East Central Ohio has such a long history of alleged Bigfoot reports dating all the way back to the early 1900s in the state. And it's just kind of the heart of, let's just say, Ohio's Bigfoot country.
Yeah, and we talked in the first segment to a professor who studies folklore, and he had numbers of where Bigfoot sightings have been throughout the United States, and he said that Ohio ranks fourth for the most Bigfoot sightings in the country. Would you agree with those numbers? Is Ohio, or you think Ohio ranks higher up there?
Well, I would say Ohio will be top tier, but a part of it is because Ohio has had a long history of having Bigfoot investigators in the state since probably the late 60s. And when you have active investigators, you're going to have more documented cases, documented reports. So it's going to, it could sometimes, how should I say it? It could slur the numbers a little bit in one way or the other. But let's just say Ohio has everything you need for Sasquatch. You have lots of water, lots of cover, and a lot of lack of natural predators. And when you have a lack of natural predators, a Sasquatch is going to take fully advantage of the situation.
Now, how long have you been organizing this conference? I know this is not the first year.
Oh, it's been many years. I took over from the original organizer. My first year was 1994, I believe, or even sooner. So it's pushing 20 years. I mean, it's been over 15, 20 years right in there, but the conference has been going on since 1989. Mm. And it started in just a little small union hall in Newcomerstown, Ohio. And it's slowly eventually got to Salt Fork in the early 2000s. And once I took over, it really started to implode or explode in size. And now it's almost impossible to get a ticket. You know, typically when the tickets go on sale, they're sold out in usually less than an hour.
Yes, I saw on your website that it had the exact day and time when tickets go on sale. That's so I was going to ask you if there are still tickets available. The conference is coming up in just a few days.
I did release just a few, and I'm talking less than 8 or 9 tickets that I had held back just for this reason. And I did release them on the website. So if there are people that still want to come down and see all the lectures on Saturday, which you would definitely want to get a ticket. If you're just coming down to see what it's about, shop at the gigantic flea market that's inside the lodge and outside the lodge, that's free and open to the public.
Okay, yeah. So tell me more about what happens at the conference. I know you mentioned the flea market, but then you also have a set of speakers. Just give me an overview of the conference.
Well, typically how the conference works is people start coming into the Salt Fork region on Thursday night. And then on Thursday night, you have a lot of all adult activities, just getting to see people again you haven't seen since the following year and just catching up and things like that. Then on Friday morning, we have a free to the public advanced Bigfoot hike. All you do is meet in the upper level of the Salt Fork State Park Lodge parking lot at 11:30. And then we'll depart to a pre-set up location to go for a nice hike and, usually 2-3 miles with a little break in between and in areas of historical Bigfoot sightings. And then, of course, you get into the evening on Friday. There's registration. There's a dinner. There's a meet and greet with the speakers Friday night at the lodge. And then on Saturday is the main event with all the vendors on 3 floors in the lodge, outside in the front of the lodge. And then the speaker presentations begin roughly around 11 in the morning, and they run all the way into about 7 o'clock at night. And this year I've been very fortunate to have Renee Holland come back from finding Bigfoot, Dr. Jeff Meldrum from Idaho State University. I have Shelley Covington, Montana, excuse me, from Texas, who's a very well-known tracker and Bigfoot investigator. Of course, I have Cliff Berrickman from Finding Bigfoot and Seth Breedlove of Small Town Monsters. And I have my MC this year is Dr. Esteban Sarmiento from New Jersey, fantastic primatologist, and just a whole array of special people in attendance. And like I say, the lectures are that's what the conference is about, being able to see the speakers. It's fantastic.
Now, do most people who come to your conference, are they from Ohio or do you get people from all over?
I get people from all over the country, all over the people from England, New Zealand, Australia, literally Japan, all over. We've had people come from all over to attend the event.
Have you yourself, have you always loved Bigfoot? Have you always been in this Bigfoot world?
Well, I mean, I had a grandfather that when I was a little boy going third and fourth grade, every Friday night we would watch In Search Of in the late 1970s. And with Leonard Nimoy, and after seeing the episode of Sasquatch in America, I asked my grandfather, I'm like, point blank, is Bigfoot in Ohio? And he kind of looked at me and he says, you know what, I've seen stuff in the newspaper, so probably yes. And so that kind of caught my eye, and I ran to the library at Hilliard Elementary School in Westlake, Ohio that next Monday and found a Bigfoot book by John Green, and the rest was history. I've always been interested in it because I just think that there's so many things unexplained in this world that and we're still learning today all these new species and things like that. So the probability of Bigfoot existing is quite high.
Now, you mentioned falling in love with the idea of Bigfoot as a kid. Is the conference just for adults or do you have kids come?
Now, this is a very family-friendly event. I have kids that are now adults that were coming since they were 10 years old. And they bring their kids. And so it's a very family friendly event. Old people, young people, you know, families, elderly, just people that have the interest that like to learn and have a good time doing it. And it's always in like a family friendly environment.
And for planning this conference is like probably like a full time job. I know planning a huge conference takes a lot of time. Is this your passion project or is it a part of your?
Well, it's just one of them. I do a lot of conferences I have a lot of hobbies and a lot of interests. And matter of fact, I'm actually planning on a second Bigfoot conference, but in another state. And so I've been working on that. And then, of course, I do big trees, too. That's another thing I'm involved with. I'm a big tree seeker, searcher. So I'm going to be doing an Ohio's first big tree conference. I've been working on the plans for that, which will be, once again, another cool subject. It's a lot of work, but, you know, it's well worth it because when you see the smile on the people's faces, the people that come from all over the country that keep coming back, and that means you're doing something right.
This is All Sides on 89.7 NPR News, and we're talking about Ohio's connection to Bigfoot and the upcoming conference for anyone who's interested in learning more. With us is Mark DeWerth, organizer of the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. Now, you just mentioned the trees. So when I Google you, Mark, I found a lot of articles of calling you the person in search of Ohio's biggest trees. So this is another, tell me more about that.
Well, it's just, you know, it's kind of funny. I kind of stumble upon a lot of big trees on my Bigfoot investigations over the years. So I would take photos of these big trees and post them to my personal page. And people would start messaging me saying, hey, I know you're out looking for some Bigfoot evidence, but where's that tree at? And I'd be like, well, why? What's the interest? And they're like, well, you know, the state has these, you know, big tree programs and the country does with the biggest trees in the nation. And I said, well, wow, I didn't realize that. So I was getting so many messages over my tree pictures. So I decided to start Big Trees Ohio, another Facebook page. And then so I started that page with the idea I could put all those photos over there and people can then comment and connect there rather than into my Bigfoot stuff. And Big Trees Ohio now has almost like 60,000 followers on Facebook, another, you know, 15,000-20,000 on Instagram. So it's gigantic. And I go around the state all over Ohio getting access to private land by property owners and get to see these amazing old historic trees. A lot of them forgotten, a lot of them thought to be cut down that I refound. And it's like, hey, that tree you're looking for is actually here. And it's pretty cool. And it goes hand in hand with Bigfoot. I mean, as you see, I have a Bigfoot shirt on right now.
Yeah, and, listeners. He's wearing an Ohio Bigfoot for sure. Yep.
So for example, let's say you invite me out to see your white oak on your farm. Mm-hmm. So, and they see my Bigfoot shirt, you should see how many times people have said, "Is that Bigfoot stuff for real?" And I'm like, "Well, yeah, heck yeah." He goes, "God, my brother swears up and down he saw one on our property across the street 5 years ago." I mean, so it really goes hand in hand, it's fantastic to be able to live in nature, work in nature, and just enjoy it. It's amazing.
Now, not to get too far off Bigfoot, but I have to ask, where's the biggest tree you found in Ohio?
Well, the biggest tree that I consider the biggest, there's an eastern cottonwood tree there were rumors of it for many years in Medina County. Mm-hmm. And after me and a couple other people in Big Trees, Ohio, we did a lot of searching the newspaper archives, and somehow I found a last name. And then when I found the last name, I'm looking at the name, I'm thinking, wow, I have a client with that last name. So I went and talked to that guy one day. And he goes, "Oh yeah, that's at my grandparents' farm. It's down the road on the left. You have to go way back. You can't see the tree from the road. It's a gigantic eastern cottonwood. It's like 32 foot in circumference, 120 foot tall, gigantic tree, perfect health." And then there's one down in Adams County that I was invited on a property by a farmer, and his old drainage line that went from the Ohio River up to his farm, there was a sycamore there that's like 43 foot in circumference, just gigantic.
Wow.
Absolutely massive.
43. Oh my goodness. I'm having trouble picturing that. All right. So yeah.
It's huge. Yeah.
So back to Bigfoot for a second. Does your conference have a Bigfoot calling contest? Because I saw those in my Googling. I also found some of those.
Yeah, you know, we have in the past, and, you know, it just depends. You know, the event changes kind of all the time. Like, you know, now on Sundays, we used to have like a picnic, you know, and chainsaw carving for some years. And then we went over to having another small event because of the tickets selling out for Saturday so much, people always say, "Well, I can never get tickets to see the speakers." So on Sunday, we do what they call a speaker panel town hall event. And it goes from like 11:30 in the morning to 2 o'clock on Sunday. And it's a much less expensive ticket. And this way people can come meet the speakers, hear what the speakers have to say in Bigfoot, but they're all on one big panel and they're doing Q&A live, talking to witnesses and things like that. And that's a real popular event. And people really, especially with kids, they really enjoy it.
Well, I'm going to play a clip for you that I found from a past Bigfoot calling contest.
Okay.
So one of those in there sounded a little bit like Chewbacca to me from Star Wars. So I was just wondering if your conference, does your conference lean into that? Because you are on May the 4th weekend.
Yeah. And, you know, we have in the past, but no, it doesn't. They don't sound like that. But, you know, it's all in the fun. Everyone has their different, calls that they make. Some are hilarious. Some are pretty good and others aren't. So it just depends. But yeah, it is May the 4th. You know. We did a May the 4th conference the one year. You're exactly right. And yes. But no, we love Star Wars, too. So that's all cool.
Now, Salt Fork State Park recently opened a new Eco Discovery Center. And I read that they're going to have a space in there dedicated to Bigfoot. Do you work with Salt Fork State Park a lot? Has the conference always been there?
Well, I mean, the conference has been there since like 01 or 02, right in there. And when they did the ribbon cutting ceremony last week, I was down there at the ribbon cutting ceremony. And yes, they have a very large Bigfoot display throughout the whole center itself. There's Bigfoot is literally rolled into every exhibit in one way or the other. If it's on the wall, if there's a full size Bigfoot, you know, there's one out in the back along the concrete walkway behind. There's a gigantic concrete one. So Bigfoot is definitely embraced by the park. And it's funny because many years ago, I'd be out doing nighttime research in the mid 90s, and the rangers would come down and see who it is, and they tell us to leave, get out of the park. There's no monsters here. And now they love it. It's hilarious.
All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time, and I want to wish you good luck with your conference. If people want to get those last 8 or 9 tickets, what website do they go to?
They should go to OhioBigfootConference.com or OhioBigfootConference.org. It'll go to the same place. Facebook, it's Ohio Bigfoot Conference Salt Fork, all those words combined. Check us out. And like I say, the event on Friday, Saturday, if you just want to come down with the family, it's from 9 a.m. to 7 p.m. There'll be food trucks outside. There'll be all sorts of stuff. Tons of vendors, just like 50 plus vendors, and with every kind of Bigfoot, cryptid, UFO, alien, any kind of unusual type stuff possible.
All right. Well, thank you so much for your time. That was Mark DeWorth, organizer of the Ohio Bigfoot Conference. Mark, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me. Enjoy your weekend.
And thank you for joining us. This has been All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. I'm Amy Jurevich.